so much, everybody, for coming out here tonight. It means a lot to me. It really does, because it's not easy. I've never done this yard site thing. It's the first time for me, and it's hard. It's just really hard. I've been, like, on Shpilkos all day, or since Shabbos, really. I've just been, like, anxious and in a tizzy, gearing up to tonight. Tonight is actually my mother's yard site right now. It's Lamed Cheshvan. It was actually a year ago today that my mother, Rachaleya Bas Aaron HaKohen, passed away, and we still miss her a lot. So it really means a lot to me that you're coming out to hear some words about her, to hear some words of Torah that I want to share in her merits, in her zechus, that her neshama should have an aliyah, and words that I think really describe my mother. And I know that everyone in this room has met my mother. Everyone, my mother's been up in this community 14, 15 years now. I forget, I lose track. And she really considered Ottawa her second home. And it really is special that I feel like our friends and our extended family are here to hear some words about my mother. So really it started, not about my mother, it really started back in the summer when I was doing the Jet Yarche Kala. So the topic that I chose, or that we worked out together with Rabbi Mrs. Schaps, was the topic of Birchas Kohanim, the priestly blessings. And it was quite a broad topic. There was a lot, really, to discuss about it. So when I was preparing, I divided it up into five parts. So there was the explanatory section, which was just really like Be'or Milim, what do the words mean, and what does the tefillah mean, the translation. There was the halachos about it. How is the tefillah done? How do we perform this mitzvah? Who performs the mitzvah? When do they perform the mitzvah? And there was also the mitzvah about it. Like, what is the rationale behind the mitzvah? And how is the rationale performed? So that was supposed to be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then Thursday and Friday were supposed to be two topics taken out from Birchas Kohanim and expounded upon. So the two topics that jumped out at me was Shalom, which we'll see in the words of Birchas Kohanim, obviously Shalom, and Chen. Shalom, peace, and Chen, which is grace or an inner refinedness. And being that I love to prepare and I love to learn, I went a little bit wilding, and I prepared and I prepared and prepared. So basically, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday's class became Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And I still had all these handouts of the Thursday and Friday classes that never happened. So I, what?
Next year.
No, this is it now. We'll have to do a new topic next year. So what I told the people who had come to the class was that I owe them a sequel, because I was only, not even, I was only, I don't know, 70% done, let's say. So when I was thinking about that, when would be a good time to have this class, I thought of saving it for next year. But then I was thinking that I wanted to do something special in memory of my mother. And I was thinking that it just made so much sense that the two topics that I had begun to prepare were Shalom and Chen. Because, is there too much noise on there? Okay. Can you people in the background, could you mute your mics? Thank you. Thank you. I don't know who you are. Don't worry. We don't know who you are either. But if you can just mute. Thank you. No, because then I don't know if it'll pick me up. I don't know how this works. Okay, whatever. So the story is that I was thinking that Shalom and Chen are two personalities that really describe my mother so well. And especially when I was doing the preparation and I was looking through all the notes that I had, I was like, yeah. Yeah, and yeah, and I had all kinds of examples and all kinds of things that I would like to share with you about the topic, and just see how it ties in together with my mother and her personality and why we miss her so much. So what I want to give you is the handout for tonight, which has Birchas Kohanim on the front, and it has my sources on the back. So really, the front page, which has Birchas Kohanim, that's just purely for reference, because if you missed the Jet Yarche Kala class, you'll have to get the MP3. I did all that already. So we're going to really just focus on where I got the idea of Shalom and Chaim from, and those are the highlighted and bold words that are on the page. Ya'er Hashem panav eilecha v'chuneka, which is Hashem should shine his countenance upon you and be gracious to you. That will be for next class. Tonight is Yisah Hashem panav eilecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. May Hashem turn his countenance towards you and grant you peace. So that is hence today's topic of Shalom, which is peace. So the famous words that we know, that ends off Kaddish and it ends off a lot of the parts of the Tfilos, Hashem oz li'amo yitain, Hashem yivarech es amo b'shalom. Hashem gives strength to his people, Hashem blessed his people with peace. And Hashem gave us a special vessel, a special container, a special source, which is called Shalom. And this gift, this source of Shalom that Hashem gave to us, is something that is exclusive to us as a people, and it was given to us al yaday nesiyas panim, which is through the Birkas Kohanim, by the Kohanim who pass on that bracha to us. The blessing of peace is passed on. They are the channel, they are the conduit to this blessing, which you could hear more about. What I'd like to connect this to is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. There's a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Beis. Hillel Omer, Hillel says, Hevei mi talmidav shel Aaron, ohev shalom virodev shalom. Be like the children, the descendants and the students of Aaron, ohev shalom, love peace, virodev shalom, and run after peace. Hillel was the one who coined this phrase. Ohev shalom, virodev shalom. Run after and seek peace. What we know about Hillel, it makes sense that he would be the one to find peace so important. Because we know of Hillel, that Hillel was one of the prime examples of patience. He was the one who the famous story happened about on a short early Friday noon, which we can relate to as the days get shorter, how somebody came because he had a bet with his friend that he would be able to get Hillel angry. And he came on an early Friday afternoon with all kinds of nonsensical, unimportant questions to ask Hillel to try to get Hillel upset, and he was unsuccessful. So it tells us that Hillel was like the prime student of Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen was also known to be a lover and a chaser of peace. What I find interesting is that my grandfather, my mother's father's name was Aaron, and he was a Kohen. You know, as a side point, his wife's name was Elisheva, which was also, in true Torah form, the wife of Aaron was also Elisheva. So when it came time for my parents to name my youngest sister, and they wanted to name her after my grandfather, who had passed away, I forget, maybe 5 years before that or so, and they had only girls since then. So they had wanted to name this daughter after my grandfather. How do you make Aaron into a girl's name? So my sister was born a couple days before Yom Kippur, and she didn't have a name until Shmini Atzeres. So it was a long discussion, took quite some time. How do we turn Aaron into the female version? So my parents, and it tells us that parents have Ruach HaKodesh, they have like a divine inspiration when they give their children their names. Like there's a certain koach, a certain power that they have when they pass over a name, because a name has so much meaning and a name has so much content and so much potential within it, which we'll get to a little bit later. And they wanted a name with a potential so that this daughter would be like my grandfather. And they chose the name based on this pasuk, Hevei mi talmidav shel Aaron, be like the students of Aaron, ohev shalom, love, peace. Her name is Ahuva, okay, for love. And that is how they chose her name. And there's a little more to the story, but I'm not so sure I'm allowed to share it, so we'll leave it out. So, basically, so my parents had this, you know, divine wisdom when they named my sister Ahuva, and named after Aaron HaKohen, to follow in the path and the footsteps of her grandfather, my mother's father, who in turn, my mother obviously followed in the paths of her father. So we see, and who was following in the path of the original Aaron HaKohen, his original patriarch, the one whom he was, you know, linked back to of so many centuries before. So how Aaron HaKohen? How was he an Ohev Shalom and a Rodev Shalom? Aaron HaKohen was actually the model of peace. He didn't just live peace, but he pursued it. How? The Torah tells us that he didn't have to preach. He didn't have to condemn. He just enveloped people with friendship. He just looked out for other people and expressed his care and concern from his warm personality, and people were naturally drawn to him. And I think we found the same thing with my mother. People were just drawn to her. People were just inspired by her. She didn't have to say a word, but she just gathered friends like, I don't know, people gather dust. There were people that we didn't even know of. You know, we knew of our family, we knew of our extended family, we knew of her immediate friends, of which Rabbi Shapta's sisters were a very close one for years and years, very, very close. And we knew of her inner circle. What we didn't know of was the outer circle and the outer circle and the outer circle, and how many people were touched by her, and how many people were so loved by her and felt beloved by her as well. How many people came to us after she passed away and said, I feel like I lost my best friend. And it was not just once, it wasn't just twice that we heard that. And they were all honest, they were all sincere, and there were people we didn't even know that she was friends with that were saying things like that. So where did Aaron get this from? How did this happen? So Aaron was older than his brother Moshe. And Aaron was originally the leader, the representative of the Jews in Mitzrayim. He was the Navi. He was the one who Hashem spoke to. But once we had the incident of the Sneh, of the burning bush, when Hashem chose Moshe to be the leader, his position was taken away. He became usurped by his younger brother. That's not really a very good feeling in general, to lose your position and the fact that it goes to your brother and your younger one at that. Right? So Moshe was afraid. He's like, Hashem, how am I going to go back? Like, what's going to be the reaction of my brother? How am I going to go tell him, you know, guess what? It's me now. So Hashem says, don't worry, Moshe, because vira'acha v'samach belibo. When he meets you, he's going to see you and samach belibo. He's going to be happy and so overjoyed, not just in his countenance, not just in his face, but inside. He's going to have such inner peace. He's going to be totally unperturbed, totally unbothered by the fact that you have taken away his, what might be, what might seem to him as his rightful role or his honor or his deserving, you know, position because of his age or status in the family. And that happens to us every day. We come across different situations where we have setbacks. Different things happen to us. We might not be so thrilled with the weather. We might not be so thrilled with how the cash person treated us online at the supermarket. We might not be so thrilled with a coworker. Whatever it is, a caregiver, you know, not that ever happens, but, you know, different situations which might cause us to be upset. And we may have a right to do that. We may have a right to be upset. But if our agenda and our goal is peace, then we have to look over and look above and see how we can rise against that occasion, how we can take peace to a new level. So let's see, what are the dangers in letting things lead up one to the other? In Sefer Bamidbar, there are three topics. And they're all nearby each other, within a short amount of psukim, within a short amount of verses, there's three separate topics. So topic number one is a person who steals, and then he swears falsely. He stole, but then he swears that he didn't steal. And then we have, immediately after, we have the story of the Isha Sota, a woman who was unfaithful or suspected of being unfaithful to her husband. And followed by the third topic, which is a nazir, a person who swears that he is not going to drink wine or any other intoxicating beverage. So the Ralbag wants to know, what is the relationship between these three topics, that they come one after the other, what do these cases have in common, what's the similarity between them, what is the evidence that they should all be together? So he says like this, he explains. Now we're going to have to look at this going down and going up. So forward and backward. So scenario number one was the person who steals and swears falsely. This shows that there's a problem with society, because people are stealing, people are robbing, people are lying about it. That's not good. In order for society as a whole to be peaceful and to be getting along with each other, we need peace. We want to have a peaceful society, but we have this person who is not acting in a peaceful way. He's acting in a corrupt way. So where did that come from? We take it to the story that comes next. We're going backwards. We take it to the story of the Isha Sota, the woman who's not faithful, that's certainly not peaceful. She's not at peace with herself. She's not at peace in her home. She's not at peace with her family. So how do you expect it to go outward, right? So we're doing like the outward to the inward, but the inward also works outward, because then we have the person who is trying to make himself better, so he swears that he's not going to have wine or other things like that to make himself be at more at peace with himself, because if he's at peace with himself, he'll be at peace with his family. If the family's at peace, then society is at peace. So again, we're like rippling in and rippling out. So the question that we have on that is, how is the nazir, a person who is restricting and restraining himself, a symbol of somebody who is at peace? Because for those of us who have ever tried to not eat cookies or cake, so I don't really have much of a problem with chips and candy, but cake and cookies, like my famous expression is, I've never met a cookie I don't like except poppy seed cookies. So I'll eat any cookie. So if I've ever tried to not eat a cookie, I am not at peace with myself. I'm getting anxious. I'm getting irritable because I want the cookie. I feel like I'm depriving myself and there's something that's really good, something that I really want. So if we have this nazir who's depriving himself of something, how is he feeling peaceful? Why is he not feeling good? Or how is that making him feel good? So the answer, explained according to the Ralbach, is that people are not just a body, which we know. We are our guf, our body, and our neshama, and our soul. There's two parts of us, the physical and the spiritual. So our body is our physical part, our neshama, our soul is our spiritual part, and both parts of us need to be taken care of. And in order for our body to be at an equilibrium, our whole self body, not just my arms and my legs, but in order for me, myself, as a whole, to be in equilibrium, both parts of me need to be taken care of. So my soul can't be at peace if my body is starving, and my body can't be at peace if my soul is starving. So if we focus on only one part of our self, then the other part is not getting something, it's lacking. So what this person is trying to do by staying away from the wine and staying away from intoxicating drink is that he's trying to focus more time and more of himself on his neshama, his soul, his spiritual side, so that he can create an equilibrium within himself. And that is, so it's not that he's depriving himself of something. He might not be having something, but the not having on the one side of the scale is creating more on the other side of the scale, because then he could focus on other things that are really important and the other things that really, really matter to create that equilibrium. So what we want to try to do within ourselves first in order to make society peaceful is we have to create that equilibrium inside of ourselves to figure out what do we need to keep both our body and our soul from starving, to keep our body and our soul happy so that we can maintain an equilibrium and we can be peaceful with ourselves, we could be comfortable with ourselves, because once we're comfortable with ourselves, I can feel comfortable with the people around me, and if I'm comfortable with the people around me, then that creates on a positive energy into the society as a whole. So I think by looking at my mother, she was the kind of person who was very at peace with herself. She was the kind of person who didn't strive to collect things. She didn't strive to get, to have. She always was looking for ways that she could give, what she could do for other people. If we would try to get her to go shopping, for example, for herself, nah, I don't need anything new. It's okay. Go. You go shopping. I'll get you something. I'll get you something. Picking up something for this child or this grandchild. The cousins in Israel. The cousins in Brooklyn. Wherever. She was always looking for ways and for things that she could do for other people. It wasn't about her. She was so not focused on herself, and she was so not focused on what she needed, but rather what she could do for other people. An example of how her vision and her clarity was so one-tracked, so one-minded. When my parents got married in 1970, so it's 46 years this November. So when my parents got married 46 years ago, they were looking for a place to settle down. And they wanted to live near my father's yeshiva, where my father was studying at the time, so that he wouldn't really have much of a commute. And he would also have easier access to spend extra time at the yeshiva, and he would have extra time and access to being able to speak to the Rosh Yeshiva, who in fact, the Rosh Yeshiva and his wife had a very strong influence on our lives when we were growing up, because we just lived, you know, a few blocks away. And at that time, the yeshiva was quite small. Chafetz Chaim was a much smaller yeshiva then than it is now. And I remember growing up, playing in the yeshiva building. I knew most of the guys by their first names. I could even tell you all these rabbis. I could tell you all their English names. You know, like, I mean, I knew them. And then Shabbos afternoon, we would walk home from the davening, and we would walk the Rosh Yeshiva home. And it was just a small group of people, because many people didn't live in the area. And of the people who lived in the area, there were very few people who were part of the yeshiva for now. The yeshiva has grown since then. And that was her foresight, to live near this location. So they found an apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, on the fifth floor, overlooking what is called the Westside Tennis Stadium, which is where the U.S. Open used to be held before it outgrew its location. My father still lives in that apartment. Okay? So 46 years ago, she chose to settle in a place to be near Torah, so my father could have access to Torah. She's still there. I mean, not. But her apartment is still there. That was her focus, and that was her reality. So there are five of us. She raised five children in a two-bedroom apartment, because that's what was important to her. What was important to her was her husband's Torah growth, her children's Torah growth, and her family. She didn't need anything else. You know, we're going to talk later about when a person passes on, what they leave behind to their families. So it says the physical things, we'll get to it soon, physical things go to the heirs, and the spiritual things are theirs to take forever. Well, she took everything important with her. So that's, you know, that's her legacy that she leaves behind for us. And we know that she was at peace with herself, because it created a peace within us. Imagine five siblings. You know, we had our share of sibling spats, that's for sure. But for the most part, we got along. And today, we're very, very close. Today, we're really good friends. And, you know, as can be proven by the point that once we came to Ottawa, everyone trooped up to Ottawa here with us. You know, that very first Sukkot, we had barely moved in. We had moved in, it was Labor Day weekend. And I don't know how many weeks later, I don't remember when Sukkot fell that year, but everyone came up. They joined us for the first Sukkot. And if you remember, our house on Ardell, so we had on the street, on the main floor, two bedrooms and a washroom. Upstairs, two bedroom and a washroom and a basement. Every available space was taken. To my sister, who complains that at the time she was just a kid, she always got the couch and the curtain hanging from the dining room door because she didn't get a proper room. But we would always comment at the end of a week of all of that, those together. Because when we first came here, I was married with five kids. My next sister had only just gotten married that June. And all my other siblings were still single, okay? So for over the years, it was one married couple and three single kids. And over the years, you know, they each added on members of their families, Baruch Hashem. And we would comment how at the end of Yontif, now I have to share Yontif. You know, they still come for Yontif, but I don't necessarily get all my siblings for the whole Yontif, and I don't even get all my kids for the whole Yontif. So it, there's, you know, it depends. There's not as many people in the house necessarily at the same time, but in those days they were all single, so I got them for all the time. So we would comment to each other, we just spent 10 days with each other under one roof, and we're all talking to each other, right? That's a pretty big deal, to be able to spend 10 days with somebody under one roof. You know, there's Yontif, it's, you know, more soup, more challah, more challah. I feel like in the last few weeks, I love to cook and I love Yontif, but I almost think that a 3-day Yontif would be easier than 2 days, Sunday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 2 day. You know? So, but we, under all the conditions, and we all still are, we're still very, very close. I mean, I think we're the only family, and people think we're nuts. I think we're the only family where on a whim, we'll get up and drive with our kids 4, 6, or 8 hours to see another member of the family. Just because. Or my daughter went to camp this year, and camp started on a Thursday. However, that Shabbos was my nephew's bar mitzvah, the first nephew after Shmuley to be having a bar mitzvah. There was no way my daughter was missing that bar mitzvah. I mean, her cousin is like her brother. That just wasn't happening. People in camp thought she was nuts. What do you mean? You came to camp, you dropped off your stuff, and you go into your cousin's bar mitzvah? So just miss your cousin's bar mitzvah. It doesn't happen. You know, and why does that happen? I think that's a testimony to my mother and my father for everything that they stood for and everything that they invested in, just to show like they were like that we could still be at peace with each other. And, you know, especially also in this long and trying year, you know, we're all still talking to each other. And, you know, with all of the various ups and downs in my life and, you know, not as serious in other people's lives, but how we've all been there for each other and how we all stand for each other and we'll come and we'll drop everything. And really the camaraderie and the siblings, just really, it's a chizuk just to know that we can count on them and that they're there for us and we're there for them. They know that too. So that's all part of that inner peace. On that same Mishnah of Heve Mitalmidav Shel Aaron, there are several mefarshim. Obviously there's lots, but I just wanted to draw a point to a few of them. So one of them is the Eitz Yosef, who says, Kishod Atzmecha Be'achar Kach Kishod Acherim. In order to lead, you first have to be able to take care of yourself. You have to be able to lead over yourself before you lead others. So he says, Kishod Atzmecha, decorate or honor or crown yourself before you can crown or decorate or cause other people to do something. Basically, it's practice what you preach. You know, if you want someone to do something, you have to make sure that you yourself are doing what you want other people to do. So that is why Aaron was this person who we are told we can be like Aaron, because it just wasn't that he loved peace, but he was good at it. He was the expert. He was the one who knew how to make peace between other people. The commentary continues, and he says, the Mishnah says, Hevei mitalmidav shel Aaron. Be like the students, the disciples of Aaron. It doesn't tell us love peace like Aaron did. It says be like his student. You should be like one who practices what Aaron does. You should learn from him and take over from him, but it doesn't tell us you should be him. Why? Because we all like to think positive of ourselves, obviously. And one of the things that we might think about ourselves is that we are peace lovers. We love peace. We all love peace. Nobody wants war. Nobody wants fighting. Everyone wants to get along. But does that mean that we never get into quarrels? Does that mean that we never have a dispute or an argument or a disagreement with others? It happens. It's human nature. It's regular life. It happens now and then that we might not get along with somebody else. And we might not necessarily recognize that we are capable of doing that because, well, I love peace. I don't want there to be war. I want everyone to get along. So the mission says, listen, we're not going to tell you to be a lover of peace like Aaron. Don't even bother. Like, Aaron was on a super level. We're not going to ask you to try to be like him because it will be hard to emulate him. If you could at least get to the level where you consider yourself a disciple of his, that's great. You've really worked on yourself and you've done a lot and you've really achieved a lot. And then it also says, though, be careful, it doesn't say that we should be like the students of Aaron. It really says that we should be a student of Aaron. So while as we can't maybe reach that level of love and peace that Aaron had, we sure has better be able to, and we are capable of being on the level of his disciples. Don't try to be like them, be them, be one of them. Get up there onto that level. And there's two sections of this pasuk. It says, Ohev Shalom, loving of peace, for yourself, li'atzmo, for yourself and for your bias, for your household, for your friends, for your immediate. Rodev Shalom, run after peace, for others. So if you are able to help other people have peace in their life and to help to either be a mediator or to help negotiate, help two people come to a compromise or come to an agreement, that is called a Rodev Shalom. And a person should be Rodev Shalom even if it's hard for him. Even if somebody tries to go and help out somebody and the person is really not interested and degrades him and puts him down and makes fun of him. And I've seen that with my mother, where there are times where there were people that were not getting along and she desperately wanted to get along with those people and she tried very hard to make it work out and she was mocked or put in her place and it didn't always work out the way she wanted. But she tried. She really, really did. Now, here's something interesting from Rabbi Bunin. He says that the word rodef, which we're translating as to run, is not only, it's not to run like you're in a hurry, like running to get somewhere quickly. Rodef is to run after. It's to chase. So what you have is that if somebody is chasing you, usually you're in danger, right? Like usually running away, if somebody is chasing you, you're afraid. So you should run and chase after, you should run and chase after peace, and it even uses the translation of prosecuting peace, which might actually sound like a conflict. Peace and conflict are opposites. How do you run and create conflict to create peace? So the commentary gives an example of Pinchas. Pinchas was the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, who was known for his peace. Pinchas also was known for a famous incident, which is not necessarily recalled as a peaceful incident, right? So there were two people. There was Cusbi and Zimri, a Jew and a person from Ammon and Moab who were immoral together. And everybody was just shocked by this behavior and repulsed by the behavior and were unsure how to act and everybody was frozen in their place. What did Pinchas do? He killed them. But he's a peace lover. If you love peace, you don't kill. Persecuting and killing and peace don't go hand in hand. But that's not true. Because there are times when the peace, the quiet and the calm, because everyone was frozen and stunned, it was a false peace. It wasn't a true peace. It wasn't really a peaceful situation. Something was very, very wrong. A very bad behavior had just taken place. A very bad behavior had just happened, which caused there to be friction between Hashem and his Jewish people, between Hashem and us, which caused him to distance himself from us. That can't be peaceful. There can only be peace when we're at peace with each other and we're at peace with Hashem. So he broke the peace, or what looked like peace, an illusion of peace, to create a real and everlasting of peace by killing these people to create a Kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of Hashem's name, to undo the damage of the Chilul Hashem, the desecration of Hashem's name that was performed by Cusbi and Zimri. And as a result, he was rewarded by Hashem with Brisi Shalom, my covenant of peace. Hashem gave him this peace-loving ability and his closeness to him. And at that point also, Pinchas becomes a Kohen, because Pinchas kind of fell into that gap place where Aaron and those who were born, and the children who were, and Aaron and his children, and those who were born after were Kohanim, but Pinchas was already born, so he didn't fall into either category until he received Brisi Shalom at this point in time. And okay, we connect this Mishnah to the Mishnah that comes after it, which says that a person who tries to make his name great, a person who tries to make himself famous and to brag about himself and to get other people to know about him, in essence does not cause anyone to remember him, does not cause anybody to think highly of him, and in the end he's actually disgracing and devastating his name by people thinking that this person is just a show off and he has nothing to tell for himself. So it's telling us though that a person who is in this world and performs good deeds and does good things, that person remains great even after they're no longer here. Their name lives on, their name is still here, and the memory of the good things that they did, that does last. So a person who doesn't try to make their name last, that's the kind of person whose name does last. And we are, Baruch Hashem, now able to say that we have a new Rachel Leah in our family. My sister, my youngest sister of story number one, had her first baby about 7 weeks ago, 7.5 weeks ago. And she's our little new Rachel Leah. It was a little hard to say her name at first, although we all knew what her name was going to be. We all actually were kind of wondering how we were going to break the news to my sister that she might have a boy. And if she does have a boy, she can't name her boy Rachel Leah. It just won't work. So Baruch Hashem, she had her little girl. Everybody is thrilled to pieces. Baruch Hashem, she came in 6 weeks early. So really she was due now. She came in 6 weeks early, but Baruch Hashem, healthy, well, home and doing nicely. And if we perpetuate the name. And I told my sister and my brother-in-law, I said, listen, you guys, you're going to have a tough job. And they said, why? I said, because us aunties are going to spoil her like crazy. She's our little Rachel Leah. She's going to have a special place in our hearts. And my kids now are big. I have big kids. And they're in New York. So they're nearby. I'm telling you right now, they're going to treat your baby like their niece, not like their cousin. So good luck, because between all of us spoiling her, you guys are going to have a hard time at discipline, but we're leaving the discipline to you. No problem. You can have that part. You know, you can obviously never love a baby too much. You can never spoil a child by loving them. But she has a special place in our hearts. And the meaning of her name, the relevance, I should say, of her name is not lost on even the younger members of our family. My Devorah, who's 8.5 now, I don't remember when she said this, so it's only, you know, at most, you know, she was somewhere between 7.5 and 8.5 when we had this conversation. She said, you know what, Mommy? When I get married and I have my baby girl, my first baby girl, I'm going to call her Rachel Leah. And I said, I know, honey. I can't wait, you know? And it was really just very sweet that nobody told her that. And this is before my sister had the baby. My sister only had the baby 7 weeks ago. She said this months and months ago. Nobody told her. But it was just, she knew. You know, this was her bubby. This is her bubby, Rachel Leah. And she's going to do something to perpetuate that name. We've kind of, you know, part of that link of spoiling little baby Rachel is that we've been shopping like crazy. And we just, anytime we go to the store, we're all like looking for things. And I was with some of my single girls over Yontif at Winners, and they went straight to the baby girl section. I was like, great, you know, we're not in the teenage girl section, okay. You know, it's probably cheaper, okay, good. So they go straight to the baby girl section, and they're looking through the shelves, and they found what they thought was this adorable outfit. It was kind of cute. So I said, you know what? We're not going to get it. We keep buying stuff. She has enough. No, mommy, no, mommy. We have to get it for her. I said, Ahuva said no more clothes. She has enough clothes. No, mommy, we have to get it. I said, okay, take a picture, text it to Ahuva, and ask her if she likes it. Well, sure enough, Ahuva did not like it. I said, oh, phew, okay, we didn't bet it. So my daughter, my single daughter, goes, but I want it for my Rachelea. So I said, Amir Hashem, for your Rachelea, we'll get some very adorable things as well. So, looking forward to anyone's Rachelea. And then, what happens? Okay, so that is about her name. And here is something that also that I found very interesting and apropos. Talking about Aaron. When Aaron passed away, it says, Vayivku kol b'nei Yisrael. And all of the Jewish people cried. And it tells us, by Moshe, when Moshe passed away, Vayivku b'nei Yisrael es Moshe. B'nei Yisrael cried. It doesn't say kol b'nei Yisrael. So the Mefarshim tell us that that B'nai Yisrael is referring to the Zecharim, the males, and Kol Beis Yisrael is talking about the Zecharim and the Nekevos, the males and the females. Everybody cried, not just the man. When Moshe died, the men were devastated. Probably the ladies were upset too, but it didn't make as big of an impression as when Aaron died. What was the difference? Why did more people cry when Aaron passed away than when Moshe passed away? You know, we might think that, you know, they all missed Aaron because of his peace-loving gestures. He made peace between people. He made peace between his families. And, you know, could it be that so many people were crying because they had issues at home, or they were afraid that maybe in the future they would have an issue at home, and who would they turn to? It tells us also that there were many, many babies that were born from the time period after he passed away that were named Aaron. So the proliferation of the name Aaron, like what was special, what was unique between Aaron and Moshe? They were both leaders of the Jewish people. They were both amazing people. So the answer is that there are two kinds of ahava. There are two kinds of love. One kind of love is a love that comes because of your sense of self, that you love somebody because you see them as an extension of you. Like you're a part of me, so I love you. Or I love you because you do something for me. Like there's something connection. Like you have like kind of this give and take with this person, therefore you love them. But there's another kind of love that is the love of a Tzelem Elokim. Every person is created in the image of Hashem. And because every person is created in the image of Hashem, they have a piece of Hashem, they have a holiness inside of them, they have a neshama. And a neshama, which is holy, recognizes holiness and gravitates towards things which are holy. So even the people who are not necessarily personally affected by Aaron, they didn't have a connection where he did something for them or they did something for him, but they were able to understand and appreciate the greatness of Aaron and how special and how holy he was as an individual and as a human being. They were maybe not able to appreciate the levels of Torah and the levels of mitzvot that he aspired to and that he achieved. That might have been past them. That might have been beyond their rationale or beyond their comprehension. But what they were able to see was that specialness and that uniqueness of that love for every person that he had and that he reflected. And that, I think, also is an important point about my mother, how, you know, people were drawn to her, and people came over to us and said, I used to look forward to going to a wedding because I knew I would see her there. I would look forward to going to shul. So people would look forward to seeing her. We got cut off?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hold on. Hold on. Yeah.
No, Corley, it's your computer.
Yeah, but I do. 7-1. Not what she has here. Rabbi Shaps.
Sorry, technical difficulties. One second. Is this Ray Wolf?
Yeah, he's coming.
Okay, what happened? Hold on, I don't know. Did it die?
Power? I don't know. Where's the power?
But it should have been fully charged. I didn't plug it in because I thought it was fully charged. Does it? It uses a lot of juice?
We have a power.